Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And I had not been here for that show on Friday to hear about that betrayal by father to son in that environment.
It wasn't a betrayal, though, Gojo. Like, Pops was on my side, and he just realized the game had gotten out of hand to the point where nobody was going to raise an eyebrow with me checking myself out of the game. Like, that's what it became about. At that point, since we were eliminated from playoff contention, it was about me getting that bag. Like, I was going to get a win that day one way or the other, and the win was me getting out of there healthy, knowing that in free agency that following offseason, I was going to get pizzayed.
Pizzayed he was. Speaking of people trying to get paid around here, we want to head to the Goodyear Hotline as we help get you guys ready for Monday Night Football and beyond with our ESPN Sports betting analyst, Tyler Foljam. You can check him out as a part of the Daily Wager and also hear him on ESPN Radio. And Tyler, I saw this note on Twitter from Sal Capaccio. ESPN has removed the Skycam for tonight's game because of the wind. Not sure if they're planning on putting it back up, but I doubt it. How under can one under in this game?
I mean, listen, here's what I say about betting unders. You have a winning ticket as soon as the game starts. Now, it may turn over to a losing ticket at some point during the game, but you can't say that about an over. When the game starts and that ball kicks off, you're holding a losing ticket. You need things to happen. So I think under is the way to go in this particular matchup on both sides. They're both dominant defensively, especially when they're healthy, and the Bills have that. They have their health finally. We know that New England wants to run the football, and when they play against teams that, quote-unquote, have more talent on paper, Bill Belichick knows the formula, the recipe is limit possessions, limit series, limit play volume for the likes of Josh Allen and Steph Diggs, because the more plays you give Josh Allen, the more likely he is to assert his physical dominance and make a big play, a splash play that puts you behind the eight ball. So I'm definitely on the under in this matchup. That's the only way I would play it. If it's too low for you, pass. You don't have to play everything. But the side I do think that win, lose, or draw is more likely to go under their team total is the Patriots side. I think they can win a game 13-10, you know, 17-14. And their team total is 19.5. The team total for Buffalo is 21.5. I just think on the road, Mac Jones, as great as he's been, maybe being a little limited in how Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick will use him so they don't expose him to something that he can't handle as a rookie. Not that he hasn't handled and passed all the tests, but you know, this will be a big one. I'd be more inclined to think that the Patriots drive the under. They can win a 13-10 game, I think. So can the Bills, but no matter what, if the Patriots do win, I don't think either team is going to get to 20 points if that is the case. If Bill Belichick wins this game, I think he's trying to develop a game script where it's the first of 17 that wins in this environment.
Tyler, what about the line in this game? Because the Bills are favored by 3 points, and the Patriots have won 6 in a row. And since their bye week, the Bills have been in this pattern of win one, lose one. So where do you see value when it comes to the number and the spread in this game?
Yeah, I actually see it on the Patriots now. And I kind of flip-flopped here a little bit because when it was 2.5, I thought, all right, if you know the Buffalo Bills under a field goal, I think that's the value there at home. And before I learned about, you know, the weather forecast and the potential inclement weather we're going to see there, I was like, all right, 2.5, that's the Bills. But a half point makes all the difference in the world in gambling in terms of finding the right side of the value. And I think once it gets bumped to a full field goal, that's asking a little bit too much, and that's benefiting Bill Belichick and the Patriots. So let me pose this question to you fellas. In a situation like this, where there's going to be inclement weather, there's going to be you know, a specific game plan and scheme that you're going to have to dial up to not only battle your opponent, but to battle Mother Nature, which coaching staff, which coach do you trust more to succeed in such circumstances? As great and as good as Sean McDermott is, I think I trust Bill Belichick more to not only develop a scheme and a game plan for a specific opponent, but a specific type of weather environment, high winds, maybe some lake effect snow, all that jazz. So that leads me to the Patriots side. Oh, and I get a field goal on top of that with a head start on the scoreboard. That's the way I'm leaning in this one.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to Tyler Foljam on the Goodyear Hotline, part of our Monday Night Football preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. And yeah, Tyler, we were just talking about that. This Patriots team has the exact identity and knows itself well enough to walk into this game in a way that they can feel very confident about for all of those reasons. So you mentioned the Patriots get to start with that three-point advantage here. Is there anything on the Bills side that you do like in this game, whether it's a player prop or otherwise, where we can find a win in that Bills uniform?
Yeah, I do think Josh Allen, his rushing prop, 35.5, was the last time I checked. I would play that over. He's the best weapon that Brian Daboll has. He's the best running back that Brian Daboll has. And I think he'll drop back to throw the ball, you know, 30, 35 times despite the win. But I think on, you know, 3, 4, or 5 of those dropbacks, he'll look at the scheme that Bill Belichick has drawn up for that particular play, the looks he got at the line of scrimmage versus the coverage evolving and changing when he's dropping back and, oh no, where do I go with the ball? Well, he has a weapon in his toolbox if that happens. Well, tuck it and run 4 or 5 of those dropbacks that are designed pass plays. So you add that to the design runs that Daboll will call, I think you're going to see 7, 8, 9, 10 rushing attempts in this game for Josh Allen, given the wind and the specific scheme and defense he'll be going up against. If he gets 7, 8, 9, 10 runs, even against a Patriot defense that is good, I just don't see him averaging less than, you know, 3, 3.5 yards per carry. So over 35.5 rushing yards due to the opponent and the environment, I think is what I like on the Buffalo side with Josh Allen. I think the only thing that really, you know, knock on wood, the only thing that really keeps him from getting under there, I'd be shocked if it's the efficiency. It would be him lacking the rushing attempts, which would be, you know, also shocking to me, or heaven forbid he misses some time due to injury. But you can't really forecast that. As long as he's in there, as long as he gets to play all 4 quarters and it's a close game like we think, I think he'll have the opportunity and the efficiency to go over that 35.5 rushing total mark.
Tyler, always a pleasure, man. Check him out on Twitter at Tyler_Foljam and on the Daily Wager right here on ESPN. Always appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
Boom. Talk to you guys next week.
That Monday Night Preview is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs for protection on the road and on the water. See how much you can save in as little as 3 minutes at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. And Chris, for that Bills defense and that side we've talked about so much on that Notre-Davious White anymore and that defensive secondary that's certainly been one of the best, a D-line made up of guys that really just want to rush the passer first and foremost, this all seems to be a recipe for the Patriots. And normally that would make me think, man, it's time to go Oppo, but Bill Belichick and Nick Saban got that magic touch, whatever it is, where especially at this time of year, I have a harder and harder time betting against these dudes.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I told you a month ago that the Patriots are the team that I trust the most week to week in the NFL, and with the Buffalo Bills being in the pattern that they've been in since their bye week, they just haven't looked as dominant consistently, and so that makes it hard for me to trust them. And then looking at their offense, they make themselves one-dimensional with the play calling. They ask Josh Allen to do an awful lot, and they don't really give him the run game or the short passing game to lean on to alleviate some of that pressure. So when it comes to Bill Belichick, we know that he frustrates young quarterbacks, and Josh Allen is still a relatively young guy in this league. So I would imagine he's going to throw some things at him, and Josh Allen hasn't seen from this Patriots defense all season long, and that can present opportunities for takeaways for the New England Patriots. So, yeah, in inclement weather, like Tyler said, I trust Bill Belichick the most, and I trust this Patriots team the most in terms of what I'm going to get for them and them being able to dictate the complexion of the game to lean it toward their strengths and what they do best. So, yeah, I think this is a situation where we're talking about the Patriots stacking another win to make it 7 in a row. As good as the Buffalo Bills are, I just don't trust them as much as I do New England.
No, and if you want to look at recent history since Week 5, the Bills have literally gone win-loss, win-loss, win. They have alternated week by week, and so they are due for a loss at this point. Get ready for the win to come on the road against Tampa Bay next week if that pattern wants to hold. But going to be a rough one, especially, again, high winds in the forecast, potentially in some inclement weather. It all keeps tilting in favor of that team in New England. Coming up next, though, while New England gets back to where they're used to on top, have we finally seen rock bottom for one NFL franchise? We'll tell you next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We'll continue to look ahead at Monday Night Football. Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, going to join us in about 10 minutes. I also believe I have got the ace in the hole needed to convert Mina Kimes into being a Notre Dame fan, Chris.
Really?
I think I've got it, man.
Okay.
We had the introductory press conference with Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame's new head coach, earlier this afternoon in South Bend. And I learned something that even I didn't know about my newly minted head coach. And so I think that fact can be the difference that gets me over the top to recruit Mina, which Marcus said he's going to be involved with every major recruit that comes on from here on out. So we're going to have to get him on the show to help with this recruit as well.
Absolutely. I did learn something about Marcus Freeman over the weekend as well. I saw the family photo that Notre Dame posted on the social media account. And let's just say this, judging by the number of kids that Marcus Freeman has, he's been busy.
Yes, the Freeman household, active, six, count them, six kids.
Yeah, he's 35 years old, he got six kids, he's been busy.
The Catholic fan base will be very happy, to say the least here. So Marcus Freeman already coming in and getting great grades for the hire here in South Bend, had him introduced earlier. So we will talk to Mina Kimes about that and plenty of the NFL happenings in about 10 minutes. But Chris Canty, former New York Giant, Shannon Penn, our producer, proud New York Giants fan, Devin Kane, also New York Giants fan as well. I feel like I need to do a wellness check with everybody in the room right now because are we now officially into Jake Fromm season? We have the injured neck of Mike Glennon. Well, joking, he just has a large neck. And the actual injured neck of Daniel Jones here. So I want to start with you, Chris, and go around the room here. Is this rock bottom?
You know, the problem I have with that question, Gojo, is that every time somebody asks somebody, is it rock bottom, it ends up getting worse. And so I don't like the way that you're framing the conversation right now for the New York Giants. I mean, that being said, it's getting to the point where it's so bad that ownership is going to have to be forced to do something different, which is why I think this is a positive. This is a blessing in disguise. There's a silver lining to the disastrous season that the Giants are having once again. Like, it's been really, really bad since the start of 2017. The Giants have a 22-54 record, and Dave Gettleman was on the job since the end of the 2017 season. So at some point you realize the job that your general manager has been doing hasn't been good enough, and you realize from a development standpoint with your players, the job that Joe Judge is doing isn't good enough, and they're going to be forced to do something different. So, I mean, in a perfect world, you'd like more games to be able to evaluate Daniel Jones. So for the Giants – potentially saying that Daniel Jones is not going to be starting for another straight week. You hate that he's missing those chances because you get more looks at him so you can make a definitive determination. But, I mean, it's Jake Fromm. You know the prospects of going out to the West Coast and the team that you're going to be playing in the Chargers is probably not going to go well for you. So I think this is just one of those things that forces the Giants to have that come-to-Jesus moment to realize that they've got to have wholesale changes in the offseason.
Yeah, for anyone that missed it, the report from our ESPN NFL insider, Adam Schefter, says that after further visits with the Giants doctors and specialists to have the neck injury evaluated, Daniel Jones is unlikely to play versus the Chargers, per sources. The team hopes Jones won't miss much more time, but Jake Fromm, signed off Buffalo's practice squad, could be in line to start on Sunday. Shannon, I feel like this one has hit home yet again for you, so how are you doing? Like, what's the general state of the union? Are you in line with Chris Canty's brand of hope?
I have no more hope left to give. I have no more ambition. I have no more. I don't have anything left. Devin Kane, Ryan Matlack, help me out here, please. The whole staff full of Giants. We're hurting right now. Guys, can you help me out with this one, please?
Devi, how are we feeling?
Listen, man.
Oh, no.
This is bad. This is real bad. This is the worst that I can remember. And I've been a Giants fan all my life. Jake Fromm season.
Oh God. Does that hurt to say?
It hurts to say, but what am I give me a single thing that I should be hopeful for, excited for.
Well, like Chris just said, like, it makes it abundantly clear that you've got to make change, that the status quo is not good enough.
Yeah, because we suck.
Well, yeah.
So that's not a positive. I guess it is a I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't know what my feelings are.
Well, it could be another year, Dev, of Daniel Jones, Dave Gettleman, and Joe Judge. Do you want to sign up for that?
No, I don't. But
exactly.
I don't have any faith that the ownership, and I'll say it, I just don't think that they can hire the right person. They haven't shown that they can do it.
Well, they haven't hired the right person because they always want to be involved when it comes to football decisions. There are several members of the front office that are a part of the Mara family. So, I mean, there's something that's incestuous when it comes to the people that are buying the groceries in order for the coach to cook the meal, and it just doesn't feel like there's that strong presence to be able to push ownership back to make football decisions that are actually sound and that end up leading to the long-term results that the team is looking for. Because let's face it, like the decision that Dave Gettleman made in 2018 draft to take Saquon Barkley second overall when you had Josh Allen on the board, when you had Lamar Jackson on the board, that wasn't just a Dave Gettleman decision. Ownership was involved in that decision. And John Mara came out at the start of this year and said there were several miscalculations that they made around that time that led to this failed rebuild under Dave Gettleman. So I know Dave Gettleman is the easy scapegoat in all of this, but ownership has a part to play in this as well. And until they get all the way out the way, you're going to get more of the same, which is why I feel like they need to find somebody outside of the organization, a fresh set of eyes to step in and make the decisions that need to be made. And two critical ones that are going to have to be made this offseason, who the head coach should be and who your starting quarterback should be in 2022, because I don't believe that the incumbents are a shoe-in for those respective roles.
How about Russell Wilson?
And Sean Payton?
Why would Russell Wilson want to trust a dysfunctional organization like the New York Giants with the prime of his career when we know Russ is all concerned about his legacy? Why would he want to do that? Like, Giants fans, I understand why you want him. He's an elite quarterback. But sometimes you got to come back down to earth. Why the hell would Russell Wilson want to come to a franchise that has been as dysfunctional as it's been the last 5 years? Dev, I just gave the record. Since 2017, since the boat trip, 22-54.
Hell no.
Russell Wilson ain't never had a losing season before this year. You think he wants to come sign up for a franchise that has had five in a row and is working on five consecutive double-digit loss seasons? No. It ain't gonna happen. Giants fans got to get past that, and you got to get over yourself. The perception of who you are doesn't match the reality that everybody is saying around the National Football League. It's just not the same.
What if they had someone like Sean Payton as their head coach, though?
How are you going to get both of them? You think Sean Payton's just going to come here, and you don't have to send draft picks down to New Orleans in order to get him? So if you're sending draft picks to get Sean Payton, how are you going to get Russell Wilson? Help me out.
New York, man. Sierra wants to be there. Okay. The governor's ball.
Okay.
The Big Apple.
Okay. All right.
We're going to give Chris Canty time to cool off at these sugar plum notions of Sean Payton coaching Russell Wilson, throwing back to Odell Beckham Jr.
Hold on. Gojo, let me be clear. I do think there's a possibility that Sean Payton is coaching Russell Wilson next season. I just don't think it's going to be with the Giants.
Well. Yeah. Now we're cooking with gas here while we throw some cold water on the fires raging inside of New York Giants fans right now. Coming up next, I will begin my recruitment of one of ESPN's star NFL analysts to come over to the dark side. We'll do that after this word from Indeed. Now, if you're a business owner, you know that hiring has become increasingly difficult in recent months. So why not make it a bit simpler? If you want to easily attract, interview, and hire quality candidates, then you need Indeed. With tools like Indeed Instant Match, just sponsor a post and you'll immediately receive a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description. Then, just invite them to apply right from your Indeed dashboard. To get started today by visiting Indeed.com/credit. Back with Mina Kimes next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, they say luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
That's right.
I think that's what I've been handed here today. Because as Notre Dame introduced their new head coach, Marcus Freeman, at their press conference today in South Bend, I learned something about Marcus Freeman today. I did not know this. Marcus Freeman credited a lot of who he is today to his parents. His father, a longtime man who served in the Air Force, is a veteran of the armed forces in that branch, and from his mother, who is a Korean immigrant. So he has a Korean mother and a father who is in the Air Force. Just like our next guest, ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes, who joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline. So, Mina, since you're basically Marcus Freeman at ESPN, does that mean you're ready to come over and join the good side here for this upcoming fall?
Oh, y'all are the good side? Because that's not what I've heard from just about everyone on Earth. So not sure what to think about that, but it is hard to go against the fact, which you just laid out, the facts, which are that I really have more in common with Marcus Freeman than any person maybe on Earth, aside from one thing. He's got like six kids, right? At least yeah. I got only Lenny, so we are a little bit separated there. But you guys, it's beyond Marcus Freeman. You got the Korean quarterback, the Korean half Korean safety. Like, it's just Notre Dame might be the official team of Korean Americans everywhere.
I'm just saying, Mina, we are happy to have you on board. We understand that we may not traditionally be the most liked program, but you see already how much this is turning around. I can see that you want to be a part of it, so I will let the equipment room to know, get the gear in the mail, get Mina Kimes on board. We are going to be out here cruton, and Mina Kimes will be the five-star recruit that we land to start all this. Now, Mina, now that your fandom for Notre Dame is officially declared on this show and we will hear nothing else about that, I do want to ask you about tonight, because the pictures and images are starting to roll in as we get ready for Monday Night Football. A lot of snow and wind in the air. And so, is the Patriots +3 just too easy at this point?
Man, I take the Pats, and I definitely took the weather into account just because I think that the Patriots' running game is and their offensive line, which account, you know, is part of that running game, and their fullback, which is all, he's also part of the running game, Jakob Johnson. They're, you know, definitely the superior group. However, Josh Allen has, of course, played in harsh conditions, not just, you know, in the NFL, but also going to college at Wyoming, and he himself is a weapon on the ground. I think that could be a factor in this one. I lean Patriots largely because of the defense and the defensive game plan and the Trey White injury, a Bills cornerback, but the snow in some ways makes it harder to predict because, as you know, when the conditions are like that, you're just going to get some ugly football.
Mina, yesterday in his post-game press conference, Mike Tomlin said he wasn't surprised that Harbs decided to go for two just because he knows that the Ravens are so analytically driven and that makes them somewhat predictable. Now, Gojo and I are of the opinion if you got a play call that you like in that situation, go win the damn game. But what were your thoughts about Harbs going for two to try to win it at the end of that Steelers-Ravens game?
Yeah, well, first I would say if it's so predictable, I don't know why you had to take a timeout, and then the tight end is pretty much open anyways. But
hello,
hello. I don't know. No shade. I mean, incredible play by T.J. Watt, and that kind of is really the answer to your question, which is the Ravens lost because T.J. Watt, right? He made a really, really good play. I thought Harbaugh's explanation of his thinking there was made a ton of sense, which was the Ravens are so banged up at cornerback. You know, you don't see yourself defending against a Steelers attack that had been slicing them up in the fourth quarter. And I think that's the right way to, when you think about overtime and whether or not you want to go to overtime, it's really, as a team, and this goes beyond the Ravens, you ask yourself, do I have a better chance of winning it now or winning it then? And I think Baltimore correctly decided they had a better chance of winning it in that moment, just didn't execute on the play.
Kane Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, talking to ESPN NFL analyst and Notre Dame fan Mina Kimes on the Goodyear Hotline. Mina, are the Chiefs officially a defensive football team now?
Yeah, kind of. You know, I actually said on our show today, the Chiefs defense, especially, you know, over the last, I guess, 6 to 7 games at this point, one thing that strikes me is they look better than they did during the Super Bowl run, because during that run, you know, they were opportunistic and they would get takeaways, but they kind of had to, because you could run on them and move the ball pretty easily. And this defense, they're not turnover dependent, although they obviously got some last night. They're just fundamentally very sound. I think linebacker, which has been a weakness with this team in recent years, is turning into a strength with Willie Gay Jr., who's been playing really good football. And the addition of Melvin Ingram, looking like one of the smartest trades of the year, because he is really adding to that standard rush. So I'm just super impressed by that unit, and kind of have to be, because the offense still looks pretty mediocre.
Mina, yesterday the Chargers-Bengals game seemed like it was a referendum on who the better quarterback was in the 2000 draft class between Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow. Did Herbert once and for all prove that he's a better player than Joe Burrow?
Well, I think he's proved that he has more upside than Joe Burrow, and that's not shade to Joe Burrow. He played, well, I guess it is shade. I mean, come on. But he played really, really well. It's more of a, I guess, a testament to the fact that Justin Herbert has more upside than maybe any quarterback on planet Earth. I mean, the dude makes throws that, speaking of planet Earth, defy physics and is capable of doing things with both his arm and his legs. I mean, did you ever see that tackle? Like, what kind of quarterback tackles like that using the sideline? But I digress. In any case, I think, you know, Herbert, there's still that yesterday there was a little bit of inaccuracy in the second and third quarter in particular. Some of that had to do with the charged offensive line getting beat up by Cincinnati. And then, of course, Joe Burrow played with something with a dislocated pinky. Whatever it was, it didn't look good. So it's hard to go kind of head-to-head there. But I thought he played a heck of a football game. It was a big part of the reason why the Chargers won.
It was an incredible matchup. I believe Joe Burrow was diagnosed with ham pinky because that thing was swollen and beefy looking on the sideline here. But you guys can check out Mina Kimes on NFL Live each and every day, Monday through Friday at 4 Eastern. And download the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny wherever you get your podcast. Mina, always a pleasure. The gear will be in the mail soon.
Bye.
Mina Kimes, kind enough to join us on the Goodyear Hotline here. It sounds like Marcus Freeman is a much better recruiter than I am, because I don't think she was sold, Chris.
Nah, but listen, I think she can be talked into it. You just got to continue to work on it, man. This is the first pitch that you've made to her. You know, when it comes down to recruiting, you got to make several passes before you can get that recruit to sign that letter of intent. So this is just the first go-round. Give it some time. Let it breathe. Maybe by this time next week when we talk to her again, she might come around to join in the Fighting Irish.
Yeah, I mean, you haven't met the whole family at this point, have you? I mean, there's still ways to go as far as the recruiting process.
Oh, I'm going to need to get a bag man, aren't I? Coming up next, let's stick with a matchup of two of the best quarterbacks in recent draft class here. Between Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, who has got their team more primed to make a run in the upcoming postseason? Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
I don't know about you, one of my favorite parts of that annual, or not even annual, but every few NFL weekends when a player very publicly dislocates a finger and we get to watch the reaction of an entire nation as that player either pops it back into place on his own like a true savage or walks over to the sideline with it dangling and gives us a picture that people get all squeamish over for a while.
Yeah, I don't understand that, man. It's football. Like, guys dislocate and break fingers all the time. Now, you don't expect that to be on the quarterback's throwing hand. But, I mean, we talk about your pinky finger on your throwing hand. Joe Burrow, I'm going to need for you to toughen up just a little bit. Now, credit to the kid. He stayed in the game. He hung in there. But, I mean, we're making a really big deal of something that I'm not sure is a big deal.
Candy and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And, yeah, Chris, the one thing I will say empathizing with the quarterback is, you mentioned, in the world of offensive and defensive line, really, like, I mean, any of the front
any,
seven
any
positions,
football player. Any yeah, football player.
any football player outside of the quarterback, this is a simple part of life here and an easy solution, because if one finger goes down, you just got to align him with his buddy. Like, buddy taping is your friend. As an offense, before every game, I used to go and tape my pointer finger to my middle finger and my ring finger to my pinky on both hands to go with the double thumb braces and all that. Like, I wanted these things war ready every time I stepped out of there. And I know Joe Burrow can't do that. And part of me feels bad that quarterbacks never get to know the joy of having to buddy tape their fingers together.
Listen, I don't have that much sympathy for quarterbacks, because I play in a day and age where you could pretty much do anything to quarterbacks. They didn't have this quarterback strike zone or all the protections that quarterbacks enjoy now, where you can't hit them, you know, at the knee or below or above the neckline. Like, I played in an era where you could, you know, whatever, however you had to get the quarterback down was acceptable in the eyes of the referees and of the NFL, and that's just not the case today. Like, so I don't know how much sympathy I'm going to have with quarterbacks just because we're talking about a pinky finger. I'm just not there yet.
No. Now, that is because, as you mentioned, we had the game yesterday between the Chargers and the Cincinnati Bengals. And Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert squared off, members of the same draft class, where Joe Burrow was the number one overall pick. After one of the greatest college football seasons any of us have ever seen with that 2019 LSU team, they're always going to be linked together. And so we got that game yesterday where the Chargers went out and got a big time 41-22 win over the Bengals. And Dan Orlovsky, our ESPN NFL analyst who joined Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning, says in his mind there was one clear winner in Joe Burrow outplaying his counterpart.
I thought he did. Like, after watching the game and after watching the tape, I thought Joe Burrow played better. Justin Herbert played good. Burrow played better.
This is what, like, Herbert made more really far and faster throws. His guys just made plays. But Joe, I thought, made more impressive throws, had less misses. Herbert had a couple misses as well, had less misses. I thought he was more accurate with the football in that 15 to 22-yard range. I thought he threw the ball downfield incredibly well. That touchdown pass to Higgins was sick.
As opposed to the 50-50 ball that Herbert threw.
Herbert had three of them. Now, there were awesome, like velocity throws and launches, and you go, wow. And he had one third down early in the game. We moved up and threw across. I'm like, again, Justin played well. I just thought Joe made more impressive throws.
And Chris, I think that's always going to be the fault line in the middle of this debate, is Justin Herbert's otherworldly physical gifts that just did not have the production attached to them in Mario Cristobal's Oregon offense versus Joe Burrow, who, because he has comparatively limited skills, especially in the arm, compared to Justin Herbert, had always had to be a master of touch, a guy who understood timing and angles and does to a high level. So I would probably still side with Dan on this one. I think I've always been a little bit more in the Burrow camp for that reason. Maybe some of that is overcoming some of the confirmation bias of what I thought Herbert was coming out of college. But where did you sit after the performance this weekend?
Yeah, I'm with you guys on that one, man. And just because somebody has more physical gifts doesn't mean that they're going to end up being the better NFL player, right? Like, especially when you start talking about the quarterback position. So I'm with you 1,000%. As far as what Joe Burrow showed, I mean, I think the game went sideways on the Bengals when Ja'Marr Chase dropped that pass that ended up being an interception by Michael Davis. Like, that ultimately is what got the Bengals in such a big hole. I mean, because at that point it was a 9-0 game. It would have been 9-7 had Ja'Marr Chase made that catch and continued on into the end zone. So I think that was a big turning point for that game. But that being said, I mean, the Bengals did climb out of a 24-0 hole. I mean, they were able to book in the half with scores. They got back-to-back-to-back turnovers, which allowed them to pull within 2 points. And then ultimately, it ends up being a situation where there's a sack fumble that results in a score for the Chargers on defense. And that's when the LA was able to pull away. But I thought that Joe Burrow did a good job of playing within himself and actually making some plays to elevate the talent around him. And Justin Herbert, you see, he does rely a lot on his physical gifts and the talent of the skill position players around him. So I'm not saying that, you know, Justin Herbert isn't a special talent, but if you gave me my pick of which one I want to quarterback my football team, I would have to lean toward Joe Burrow. I just am.
I would agree, and I think we also have to look at what Justin Herbert's continually asked to do, right? This Bengals team has had to try and figure out, because of the inability of their offensive line at times last year and this year to protect, how to best serve Justin or Joe Burrow and get creative with it. With Justin Herbert, there's a lot of people that think Joe Lombardi, their offensive coordinator, has kind of been holding a lot of those gifts back, right? We haven't seen this consistently week to week. So as I'm looking who I trust more going forward, I would probably also side with Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals, despite the setback and despite this loss, Chris, just for what you mentioned, some turnover luck in there mixed in with all of this, and a defense that I think I trust a lot more consistently on the Bengals side.
No question about it, but I will say this, the Chargers have a much easier road to go. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about them playing two teams that are below 500 right now, and in the remaining five games, the Bengals don't have any such luck. Every team that they play is at 500 or better, so they got to clean up some of the turnovers. Another big turning point, that fumble by Joe Mixon, that just can't happen, man. Joe Mixon has been one of the better running backs in the National Football League this year, and I love his underrated touchdown celebration dances, but he's got to hold on to the ball in that situation. That turnover can't lead to points for the other team.
No, it can't. He has been a revelation for that team this year, and that's going to have to continue down the stretch if this team wants to continue to make a push. Coming up next, though, as we get ready for an overreaction Monday, are the Kansas City Chiefs setting us all up to wind up back in that one seed atop the AFC? Next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.